Hello, I'm here during the lunch rush with Janice, who owns her own food truck.
Best cheesesteaks in town.
Janice traded up to Geico Commercial Auto Insurance for her food truck business. We're here where she needs us most.
They sure are.
We make it so easy for her to save, with customised coverage that grows with her business. Sorry, I just get so emotional talking about saving folks money.
Not this onion I'm chopping?
It's just so beautiful. Oh, yeah, nice, the onion.
Get a commercial auto insurance quote today at geico.com and see how much you could save. Get more with Geico.
The Stool Podcast.
What do we want?
Mr. Stool!
Dad, who the hell are these assholes?
Guys are so mean.
Those kids are real losers.
We don't want your music.
You're their forfeit.
Yeah, they're so embarrassed.
To win any motherfucker over is being funny.
Nice work, you dunce.
Let's get into it, John.
What is up? How is everybody doing today? This is Johnny, a.k.a. Johnny Savage, with The Stool Podcast. And to my right, we have Mr. Antoni.
What's up, everybody? Ranthony here. Getting ready for another episode. Fun guest today.
Oh, fun. Very fun.
I'll let Mick introduce himself, buddy, and then we'll introduce our guest.
I'm Mick. So take it away.
Take it away.
Come back to me, please. I'd appreciate that. Thank you very much. And today, guys, we got a very special guest in studio today. In studio, not outside of studio, not Zoom. In studio today, a very fun guest. One of my homies now, newfound homies, because we both love cards and stuff like that.
Dorks.
So that's dorks, nerds.
Literally, I went to Frankenstein's yesterday to buy Gundam kits.
One of the funniest men alive that I've met. So in recent time, my homie, his name is Ryan Nymiller, Cripple Threat, sitting here.
Such good friends that you mispronounced.
I was
my
about
last
to say,
name.
did you get that wrong? Did he get that wrong?
Say it.
Butchered it. Nymiller.
Nymiller.
Body part the beer.
I've
been doing this 20 years. You got to deal with a lot of MCs who don't know how to say names.
That's exactly what I just did right now.
Totally did. He's one of my best friends in the world. Here's Steve Nymiller.
Just wanted to introduce Ryan Nienmeyer.
I get Nymeyer.
His name's not Steve. Oh, okay. My bad. Yeah.
How we doing? Thanks for having me, guys.
What's up, dude?
Yeah. Great to have you, man.
Hey, it's a pleasure. It's our pleasure to have you here in studio with us. We really appreciate you coming through. I know it was a little bit of a drive for you, but
not too bad.
At least on a Sunday, it's not too crazy.
Yeah, got to escape my baby for a couple hours. Make me sound horrible, but he's
escape
too-
my baby is a great song title. I don't know why. I just thought,
yeah, he's 2 years old and trying to kill me, so I had to get out of the house for for a couple hours. So this is a good cover.
Yeah,
get me out of there. So thank you,
babe. You know I got to do that podcast today.
Oh man, it just happens to be the day where he's acting the worst. Crazy. Meanwhile, I'm just like calling Johnny, like, we're recording now.
Dude,
hurry up.
I don't care what you got to do to make it happen.
Make it urgent. Make it urgent.
Happen.
But yeah, man, tell us a little bit about what you do.
I tell dick jokes for a living.
Nice.
I like that.
That's really the gist, though. Yeah, I've been doing about almost 20 years now.
Nice.
Yeah, started in 06. There we go.
That's dick joke music.
That's dick joke music. Very classy dick joke music right there. That's Shakespearean dick joke music.
Yes, that's upper crust dick joke, you know.
Yeah, right there. Now, if any of one might know me, I was on America's Got Talent a few years ago. That was kind of my thing. I got third place in 2019.
Wow.
So
nice. Very cool. Yeah.
For 1 year, I was the third most talented person in this country. It was based on a vote.
You rack up numbers like that. You put the numbers, even if it was years ago, even if it's years from now. I mean, that's an accomplishment.
Yeah,
it is an accomplishment.
Doesn't go away. I get to work on that for a while. You know, it's that.
Did you ever get any like one-on-one time with like any of the big judges or anything like that?
I mean, you deal with them, you know, like. The judges themselves, it's not like they're hanging out in the dressing room with us schmucks, you know, like they're doing their own thing.
I was just digging to really hope that, you know, Simon Cowell came into your dressing room and really like abused you at some point.
Physically.
I'm hanging up here. Yeah. He is British. They're weird like that. Simon was always very cool to me. Most of the time I spent with anybody though was Terry Crews.
Oh, yeah. Nice.
He's the host, you know, so right. He's doing all the interviews with you and all that. And Terry's like the coolest dude in the world. It's like,
he really seems like that. Honestly.
It seems like he's so cool on TV that you would assume it's bullshit.
Right.
You know, it's just one of those kind of things, but he's like the nicest dude. Like he still comments on my Instagram shit now. Cool, like, it's just really cool. That he flexes his tits at me occasionally. It's very nice.
Oh, yeah.
I'm like, I'm a married man, Terry. He's like, I don't care. Here we go.
You're in Hollywood now, baby.
You trying to make it, boy?
And then Howie was really cool, too, you know?
Oh, yeah.
He
takes good care of the
I'm a lifelong fan of Howie Mandel. He's one of my first comedy influences in general. You know, I've always loved him since, I don't know how I know this because my dad is like, you know, a dork for movie trivia and stuff like that too. But like I knew he played Gizmo and I was a fan of Bobby's World. And so as a kid, I loved what he did. Then I found out he did stand up. And so,
you know, he's super supportive of the comics on there. He was one of my biggest kind of, you know,
seems like a cool ass dude.
Yeah. I can't complain about the experience.
Stop watching football. Wait till after the podcast.
No, I'm not.
He's literally watching his game right now.
Stop watching the game. And how is my fantasy team doing? Those are the two things I need to know right now.
And tell me how I'm doing.
Those things I need to know right now.
So you've toured, you've done all kinds of, would you say you've made friends with like, there's certain comedians that you would say are like cool as fuck. And you think that you would, you know, consider friends or...
No, I hate them all. Every comic is unpleasant and a bitch to be around. No, I mean, you do this long enough, you get to like work with cool people. So it's either like I've kind of got to become friends with some cool people just through getting to work with them. And also I've been doing it long enough. Even people I started with are like, you know, if you stick around long enough, like one of the guys I started, it's always so weird. People get really impressed by this, but I don't think of him in this context. We just usually do open mics. When I first started, but like Andrew Santino, a really good friend of mine.
Mm-hmm. Oh, nice.
He's a big Cubs fan. Like that's more how we're friends.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
Like we're not talking about comedy. We're talking about
baseball.
Yeah. Palencia blowing a two-run lead in the ninth today and giving up five runs so they can lose to the Nationals. it's cool. I mean, it's just like any other group of people. Like, I think it's like kind of hard to explain because I know a lot of people want to like hear the juice, you know, it's like comedy is just like any other job you have. There's some cool people. There's some fucking assholes.
That leads to my second part of the question. Who's assholes? No.
names specifically.
Who are names?
I more or less like, I don't know. I have this like game. We've played it on here before, but it's, I kind of just like to set up this scenario. Like if a celebrity's car broke down in front of your house and you and your family were hanging out, drinking, chilling.
This is a good question.
Playing pool.
I remember this.
You know what I mean? Like do you think they would be a good hang? You know, do you think they would become like, hey, like my car's broken down, or they would just alienate? You know what I mean? They'd be like kind of
in their car with
exactly. You know, and to me, it's like I really love to like kind of play that game, almost like people watching from a distance with people, and I'm like, I don't know, dude. A lot of people these days, especially, that's probably why I gravitate towards comedy, is because a lot of people in comedy just seem like, they'd be the good hang.
They'd seem like over actors and stuff like that, for sure.
But I think the thing that a lot of people forget about that, though, is most people, if you get into comedy, it's because you have undiagnosed mental illness. and you weren't loved enough as a child. I'm saying this, including myself in the group, you don't get into comedy usually if you had a good childhood or you had a good relationship with your parents or you know how to keep a job or stuff like that. You kind of do it because it's like you have a lot of pain and you kind of like, this is my outlet.
So you're just
to get
rubbing
through.
It in that I'm like from a nice family.
I can tell just from talking to you and how unfunny your jokes have been that your parents loved you. And that's really bullshit. That's all I'm saying.
That's where the line in the sand gets drawn. And if you really understand the craft.
This guy still calls his mom every week.
I talk to her on a daily basis.
Hey, after this, where do you think he's going?
I know. He's going to go get more muffins. That is sweet mom baby.
My mom mom is not the baker type. She barbecues, okay? Oh, okay. I'm picking up ribs, stuff like that. But yeah, no, that's I've heard that often, you know, where it's like trauma creates that that kind of sense of humor that really kind of can joke about any sort of circumstance or, you know.
Yeah. But it's like, it's hard to keep, because like, you're not the same person.
That's or, not going to be.
When you're performing.
That's not.
Are you going to get a chomp loud chips? Or
this is the mukbang section of the podcast.
If he just like, let me do it without pointing
people
it out.
People will notice. Absolutely. People
yeah. No one will ever hear.
You can't even hear this.
Didn't hear a thing.
Well, I wouldn't eat it that close. I had no breakfast. All right. I'm hungry.
The worst ASMR podcast of all time.
You have like literally silent foods like gummy bears and shit here. It's like, no.
Where did the nerds go?
They're
way
on the table.
Over there.
I was professional. I got them off of our desks here.
That's true. That reminds me of the one time, cause this is very important. And I know you guys do shows and stuff too.
Right.
It's a little different probably with music because you're allowed to be loud.
Right.
But I remember one time I had a comedy show ruined because for whatever reason, this comedy club served fajitas.
So everything,
which is like, that's the loudest fucking food.
I would have just played it like, excuse me, I'm hearing a hiss.
Yeah.
That's it's not going away.
Because like, I wasn't doing that well to begin with. So like those silences are rough anyway, but there's nothing worse than like telling a joke and then you just hear, like when someone's dinner is like, you suck.
you see the little bit of steam coming out everywhere.
Like, ows, did you like, like anybody like hitting their
hand? Oh, shit. Got it. And I'm like, man, 20 more minutes. All right, let's just get through this.
What's the longest set you've ever done?
Hour and a half.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. That's a pretty good
headline
set.
Shit.
Yeah. I mean, usually when I'm headlining, I'm doing 50 to an hour now.
Nice.
But there's just been
certain
situations.
You could play around.
Sometimes you get hired for weird gigs by people who don't understand how comedy works.
Mm.
You can listen to music for a couple hours and that's totally,
mm-hmm.
People think they want a 2 hour or 3 hour comedy show. You do not.
Yeah.
That's too long to be sitting there listening to people.
You hear that,
out.
Dave Chappelle? Yeah. We're looking at you.
That's like 4 hours. See,
because that's even the thing. Chappelle is brilliant.
Yeah.
And but even gets arduous.
At a certain point, you're just like, I got shit to do. I got work in the morning. Like, I can't just sit here the whole time, you know? Like, I
don't, awkwardly smiling and nodding. Yeah.
Because you can tell, like I'm nowhere near Chappelle's level, but I'm a relatively known name. And even for me, I can pinpoint the exact moment where it's like, and now I'm going too long.
Yeah.
You can just feel that energy change. Where it's
like the internal light.
I had them. People want to go home now. I got to get out of here.
You can only do so much comedy in a night.
Yeah, and they just don't want. But like you'll hear these people. It's usually for like private events or, you know, like a corporate kind of.
Right.
They're like, you want to do like 3 hours? Like, no, we're going to do 90 minutes. And I'm going to bring an opener with me.
Because
you don't want to hear me talk for now. And sometimes they just insist. And then afterwards, they're like, you were right. You know, I'll do my best.
Thanks
you're
for the
check,
extra hour of pay.
If you write me a check, I'll do literally whatever you want me
that's
to do. But I'll also try to tell you what is the best way to make this work.
Yeah, I've always been baffled by that element of that the business. You know what I mean? You're like, all right, I'm going to go to this gig that I know there's a chance that it will not go well. And I hear this about, like, you know, corporate gigs, stuff like that, right? And, you know, you have to perform a specific amount of time and they're like, hey, maybe you want to stretch this longer or whatever. And you're like, no, I'm telling you, I'm giving you the advice. So you're going into this kind of like with the experience, with the knowledge, but with an employer that doesn't know how the job works.
Yeah, they don't. And you try it because you don't want to lose the gig either.
Right.
And I know it's like, it's not a thing that a lot of people who aren't in these businesses, either music or comedy or whatever, they don't want to hear this, but like not every show is what you dreamed of when you decided to get into this. Like at a certain point, like, you know, I'm married. I have a 2-year-old. A lot of this is I got to pay the bills.
Uh-huh.
Sometimes a gig is literally you're clocking in, clocking out.
Yeah.
And that's just natural of all comedians. Like they want to hear that's like, oh, it's so whimsical. And there's a lot of shows which are really fucking cool that I'm like thankful I get to be a part of.
Yeah.
Sometimes you're just, okay, I got to talk for 1 hour. I will be done at 60 minutes exactly in my car 5 minutes later. You know,
yeah, you're like,
sometimes that's just what it is.
The set's memorized and I'm ready to go. You know?
And it can be a variety of things. It can be, you know, you're doing a corporate event where they didn't listen to your suggestions and now everyone hated you and it's brutal and you're just like, okay, check please. All right, got to go. Sometimes it's just, you know, you got things to do, you know,
This is why I like this podcast, because like what we've noticed is comedy and music have a lot of similarities, because we play shows. A lot of the time we're booking our own shows and trying to get on shows or whatever the case is, selling tickets sometimes, whatever the case is. But also like that, like private parties. I've talked to people that, you know, in bigger bands, my buddy Trav, who comes to the shop too, in Fortunate Youth, he also said that he knows baseball players from Seattle, because that's his team. And he's played like one of their weddings. I forgot which player exactly, but he did their wedding. And he was like, they're like, yeah, you're going to play for 2 hours. And they're like, what? Like, come on now. And like, oh, we're going to have you just play on the floor. Like,
hello, I'm here during the lunch rush with Janice, who owns her own food truck.
Best cheesesteaks in town.
Janice traded up to Geico Commercial Auto Insurance for her food truck business. We're here where she needs us most.
They sure are.
We make it so easy for her to save with customized coverage that grows with her business. Sorry, I just get so emotional talking about saving folks money.
Not this onion I'm chopping.
It's just so beautiful. Oh, yeah, nice, the onion.
Get a commercial auto insurance quote today at geico.com and see how much you could save. Get more with Geico.
You know, it's like there's certain things, but he's like, yeah, we kind of like, we need a stage and we need like a professional sound system. So then like, you know.
It's not just bringing a guitar out of the van and now we're playing the show.
It's way different, you know, like you got to like, it's like you got to do all those things and accommodate in the certain way to make it all make sense. You know, like,
cause people just have the concept in their head.
Yeah. Yeah.
That it would be fun to have this cool band or I've done a couple weddings.
Yeah.
Where, you know, doing comedy and again, I'm not going to say no, if you're going to offer me money, I'll do the gig, but like, they don't understand how weird it's going to be, especially for like comedy, at least with music, people don't feel they have to shut up and pay attention.
Uh-huh.
You know, they can kind of still mingle and dance or do whatever. You can be background noise a little bit. But for comedy, it's like, all right, I know you've all been having a great time dancing and singing. Now everybody shut the fuck up.
And listen to this guy.
Some guy you don't know is about to tell jokes for 45 minutes and you will pay attention to every minute of it.
I feel like that is a weird thing to add into a wedding comedy.
That's why I think
the ultimate move I love
seeing a comedian do, and I'll see it on specials or just YouTube clips or something like that, but I love whenever a comedian like makes it known to a heckler or something that like, hey, you realize it's like my job to be up here talking. Like, that's what I'm doing. And that when they're able to like make that concise and clear to the audience in like a single sentence, I'm like, damn, dude, that's how you do it. You know what I mean? That's really a good way of just like not losing track of like, hey, I'm locked in here. Like I respect that because I'm a person who respects work ethic. You know, I do a physical, very, you know, kind of physical type of job, you know, as my 9-to-5. And so I respect people who have a hardworking, you know, kind of mentality. And I see that in comedians. A lot of people would kind of suggest like, oh yeah, comedian, huh? You know, like I'm sure people look at you sideways and you're like, oh, that's how you make money and this and this and that. And it's like, no, dude, like there is a work ethic there that it requires. There's a mentality of stick-to-itiveness that it requires. And when I really do see it in a comedian, I like respect the shit out of that.
Yeah, I love that.
You gotta be a little dumb to do the arts, honestly. Like I used to quote when I was on AGT that I live by is like, I was too stupid to quit. Uh-huh. Because like on paper, it's a dumb idea. Like barely anybody makes it.
Yeah.
It's so volatile. You know, like I was at the peak of my career, 2019. That's when AGT was for me.
Mm-hmm.
That show ended. I got 6 months where I was crushing it.
Yeah.
And then in 1 week in March of 2020, I lost about $300,000 worth of gigs in 1 week because the world shut down.
Oh, yeah. So everything shut down.
You know, so it's like everything's just very, you're not guaranteed anything in this business. You have no safeguards, you know, like
it's a constant adaptability that you have to be able to that's exactly what I mean is like literally in a moment like that. That's a very like a determinate moment for an individual, like you're going to go one way or you're going to go the other. And for a lot of people, it was, they went one way or they went the other to see the people who went, who stuck it out. that's a work ethic. That's the real work ethic it requires, you know.
And the one thing I would want to kind of add on that too, though, is that like, you're also not a failure if you decide to go the other way.
Oh, no.
Because this,
this
is a very, it sounds strange, but like, it's very thankless.
Yeah.
So it's like, and your circumstances change a lot of times too. It's also the thing. Very subtle with the crunching there, Johnny. Well done.
Yeah, pan to him. Yeah. Covering his fucking mic so he can have fucking pretzels.
I'm about to give some emotional deep response.
I'm sorry, bro.
I know. Every time I see you crunch one, even if you cover your mic, I'm going to
put him away. Sorry.
I'm going to ADR it.
Continue. But it's one of those things that, like, you know, the peaks of this are very cool. And it's cool being recognized in public and, you know, like I'm not going to claim I'm the biggest star in the world, but I'm legitimately some people's favorite comedian of all time.
Yeah. That's cool.
And that's awesome.
That's a great accomplishment.
That's a great thing. But like, you have to put yourself out so much to do this kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And for people who don't want to do it, like, I get it, because like, even now for me, as someone who's quote unquote successful and doing well, it still sucks. Like, I can put up a video and 99% of the people might like it. And then it's like, oh, some stranger just called me a fat T-Rex and told me to kill myself. Why am I putting myself through that? You know, like, it's brutal. Yeah. You know, I could be, even stuff like this, like, you know, we're buddies, Johnny, and you guys are not, this is a cool thing, but like, I could be hanging out with my 2-year-old right now. Yeah, you know, like my boy. So it's like, you have to have a certain, you know, you're also giving stuff up to do this. Cause like, to do this at a high level, you know, like, at my peak, I was on the road, you know, 45 to 50 weeks a year.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, that's rough.
Yeah.
Like, you know, and that was before I was married, before I had a kid. But like, it sucks. Like, the amount of my friends' weddings I couldn't go to and birthdays I've missed. Like, if you decide that's not worth it, I think that's also like acceptable.
Right.
You just have to know if you're going to do this, that's what you got to be willing to do.
Yeah.
Because you can't half-ass it. You can't put one foot in, one foot out.
Especially
then it doesn't work.
If you're looking at it as a financial source of income, like it's those are all the eggs in the baskets that you're using. Then dedication like that is required. You know, I like to foolishly preach to these guys when it comes to music and stuff. Like, I'd like to see more of a culture where we have more, like kind of dad style jam bands, you know, that are like dudes who work, you know, there's truckers and guys who work in warehouses and guys who work construction, but together, you know, at the end of the week, they get together and, you know, they jam in this band. You know, I like to see stuff like that succeed. Yeah, you know what I mean? Just because it's like, man, that's even double the work ethic. Right.
There's also like, just, there's levels to this too, which I think is important, because, I'll see this a lot in comedy, where there will be some people who I believe incorrectly assume that if your goal isn't to sell out Madison Square Garden or have a Netflix, that like, you shouldn't be doing this at all. And I don't think that's accurate.
No, that's a crazy way to approach anything.
Some people just like to do open mics and hang out.
Right. Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And it's a fun thing. You know, I'm an accountant all week, and the job's thankless, and you know, my wife's pissing me, whatever it is.
And
I just like to go hang out and do 5 minutes,
or
whatever. Yeah. I'm sure music's the same way too. It's like, I'm not trying to, you know, do a world tour where I'm selling out. I'm not trying to be Taylor Swift level famous. I'm just trying to, I like playing music and it's a good release for me.
One of my favorite moments I've ever had playing a show was in Joshua Tree. It was at this little art house kind of venue. In Joshua Tree, they pack the venues, man. Just people don't have shit to do up there or something.
There's nothing.
Or they just promote it well. I don't know what it is, but they'll pack these venues, you know. And you know, I showed up late to a gig. So I, like, one of the bands, thankfully, they went before us, and then we were able to make our slot or whatever and play still. You know, so I you know, kind of did a little kind of call out to everybody, like, hey, anybody here come straight from work? Anybody here come from a job, you know, and it was like, put your hands up, you know what I mean? And a bunch of people in the crowd, and like, what do you do? And I was asking people and talking to people, and it was like, well, if you have this dream or that dream, or if you want to, you know, be in a band, you want to do this, just know, just because you have to fucking do that shit first, it's not fucking impossible, man. And like, literally, I got such a crazy response on the next song, just because I was just like, anybody who came from their warehouse job, from their forklift job, from their construction job, I want you in the pit. I want you moving. We got a bunch of people moving. It was really nice.
That's tight. That was like your music version of how comedians will give it up for the troops.
Yeah.
you just get that nice, like, oh, we're going to clap for the troops. Yeah.
You cannot clap for the troops.
Right, yeah.
And to be fair, at the very end of that speech, I was like, yeah, working class Joes, anybody who pushes a broom, anybody who drives a truck, and then also troops.
Then you played the national anthem for the next 20 minutes. You did the Hendrix version.
The Hendrix version, yeah.
No, I really do. I find that so... it's almost like a thing that I witness as this like untapped way to market bands, or market at least bands that I'm fans of, you know, where it's like when I see a band that like I know they have like a 9-to-5 job and they're still like pressing away and they're doing this other thing and they're like really good, you know, I just I love that. I love that. I think that's what we need to see more of, is just regular people making music. Not through the industry, not through the system, not through algorithms and marketed through Spotify. And I just want to see stuff from the fucking ground up that naturally kind of grows like that.
The regulars.
Yeah, well, I was going to say that is one of the, I know you mentioned the algorithms, which I also hate for different reasons.
I can't imagine
But that is one of the nice things, though, about like the internet and social media, is that like that type of success story is at least attainable now. You know, like it's because like, for instance, when I got America's Got Talent, I was living in Indianapolis.
Yeah.
That's not like the mecca of entertainment where it's like, you know, like I didn't do it.
It isn't?
Yeah. You don't show up to an open mic.
I thought
mic
there was
then,
three big names. It was Wichita, Cincinnati, and Indianapolis. Oklahoma,
yeah. But it's like that world's a little smaller. One of the big reasons I got AGT is I had one clip go viral from when I did like a syndicated TV show. That clip did about 3 million views, which isn't even the craziest amount of views, but that's nothing to sneeze at. It's a good video.
Yeah.
And people from AGT saw it and were like, okay, come do our show now.
Yeah.
So it's like, it's a cool thing that like, I hate fighting algorithms now that I've kind of quote unquote made it, because it's like I didn't get into comedy to learn how to do video editing or learn the proper time to post videos and how, you know, how long they need to be and what kind of light. I just want to tell my dick jokes and go home. Yeah. Like that's what I did. But the flip side of that is, you know, I know tons of people, I'm sure it works for music too, but I know lots of, you know, quote unquote comedians, they might not be stand up, but like millions of followers just because they, oh, I just had this little cool thing. I started doing these little skits, these little whatever at home. And now like that is attainable if you want to deal with the other bullshit that goes along with that, which is now, not pissing the algorithm off.
Because we've had a bunch of people talk about this and I've always tried to kind of, I'm always the counterpoint and point counterpoint here, but here's the question. So what are we encouraging people to be good at their craft, their art? Or are we encouraging them to be good at a very specific set of skills, a la, you know, Liam Neeson here, like, but without manipulating the algorithm, learning how to market, are we just teaching people at mass how to be better marketeers than we are encouraging artistic growth and craft?
I mean, maybe, but I do think those things are, you know, they're shaking hands. It's the same kind of stuff. Like, because like, you know, I've always been a big proponent of like, just because your art's great, it's like a tree falling in the woods situation. You can have the greatest art in the world, but like, if you want this to be something, you also to need people. To know how to, like, that's part of the deal. Now you can ignore it if you want. You just can't then be pissed if no one ever hears about you.
Yeah.
I think those two have to go together.
Yeah.
You know, and I don't believe, and comedy, I don't think this happens as much, but I would always see people talk about this in regards to music, where they would be pissed when somebody made it.
Yeah.
Because like, no, you were the underground people. It's like, I think a lot of fans that are like the really artsy music fans want their favorite artists to be homeless.
Because
the second that you have a little bit of money, they
don't want them to play stadiums. They want them to play the clubs.
I'm not the biggest fan of Metallica personally, but like I would never say they suck. Like that's not the argument. But like one of my favorite quotes I've ever heard in my life is fucking Lars Ulrich, where he's talking about the fans being like, you guys sold out. You're right. We sold out Madison Square Garden. We sold out, you know, like you can still do good art and know how to do algorithms and stuff like that. And,
this and you're broaches gonna, the point I wanted to bring up earlier a little bit, but go ahead. Good.
Yeah. Yeah. I was going to say, and like, you're going to have, it's hard to always say that because it's all subjective.
Yeah.
It's all subjective some of the most successful bands of all time, for instance, I never want to hear a fucking song of theirs personally, but that doesn't mean that they're not good. But like, if you ask me, do you like that band? No, they fucking suck for me.
Name names. No,
I'll say one that is super unpopular. I would never, if I never had to hear another Beatles song for the rest of my fucking life, I would be
You'd be surprised how popular that opinion is becoming because of how tiring that, like, literally them in pop culture in general. Yeah. And I would blame more of that them being like literally used as this marketing tool to like sell stuff. That's why like people hate them. That's why there's a contingent of people who hate the Stones, who hate Led Zeppelin, is because literally there's this element to marketing a band where it's like, oh yeah, now we have the rights to the songs. We're going to associate it with things that people don't like this thing. Yeah. And we're going to associate it with that. And so that's how you get that sort of like dissonance there.
We're going to put this in a Burger King commercial.
When in reality, on a desert island, you haven't heard a song for a year and a fucking iPod washes up and there's only one song on it and it's Hey Jude and you let that grace your ears, you're going to appreciate it. So obviously, I'm speaking to a complete extreme. Yeah. But it's also to your point where you're saying like not everything is for everybody and appreciation is sort of measurable in that way. But I think we're living in a world now where marketeering is ruining that part of culture. You know what I mean? Because I'll tell you this right now, Blister in the Sun, if you never play that song for me again, I could die with a smile. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like that song, I'm so fucking tired of hearing. You know what I mean? I have like a disdain for it. And I can't explain
baseball games and they still play it there.
I can't explain why. I just hate it. And I love music and I try to be open to everything. But for some reason, when that comes on, I'm just like, I look at everybody sideways, you know?
Yeah. For me, like where I think the disconnect, and I see this in comedy a ton with stuff like that, is also like the worlds are different too. So like learning how to market yourself on the internet, for instance, is different than knowing how to market yourself as a live act.
Right.
Mm-hmm. But like, and if you try to do both, like, there's so many TikTok stars who have really funny TikToks.
I'll just say this one sentence. It's definitely harder to market yourself as a live act than it is in any other way.
100%. Yeah.
Definitely.
Yeah. And it's interesting too, because you'll have the opposite of that too. And I'll use someone like Fish as an example. Like, they're not famous because they figured out TikTok. But they're also not on the radio. They're not on. They're known.
They found their audience.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but they're a live act. Like, that's what they're famous. They're known that's for. What people are known for. And that's okay. And I also think it's okay if you're only a TikTok band, that doesn't mean your art by default sucks.
Right.
You just might not be a good live act.
Yeah.
You know,
it like, does question that for sure. It does question that. And we're because in a culture different of that
skills.
Right now.
You know, they're totally different skills. Some of the funniest people in the world I know are shitty comics. They're great writers. They don't know how to perform for shit.
That's the difference.
I also know some wonderful performers who are piss poor writers.
Yeah, they just can't come up with shit. You know?
Yeah, like, but they perform the hell out of it. So you're still entertained by watching it.
I feel attacked right now, but it's fine.
You are neither.
You're like, you're not good at the first one, you're not good at the second one. So
so you should quit. This is an intervention that we're doing right here to get you to stop.
No, but I do find it incredibly, interesting how, like I said, that parallel does exist. You know, we always talk about the parallel between music and comedy, but that parallel does exist in the constant questioning of what is hacky, what is quality, whether you get a response or not, you know, because sometimes you could play a show for the right crowd, you know, a hardcore show for the right crowd, and they want to mosh and stuff. And then there's a crowd that doesn't want to mosh.
Yep.
You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And then you could play, you know, for a crowd that's like super into dirty jokes, but there's like one person who's not, and that might spoil the show.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And that's the thing is like, there's this like kind of nebulous nature to just like, hey, dude, I'm kind of just doing what I'm doing naturally to both, to music, to comedy. And I don't know. I think we're just leaving less room for the adaptation of that, of individuals' perspectives of both music and comedy to grow more. You know what I mean? With like having to like, okay, cool. I gotta post, like you said, on schedule, these clips and these crowd work things and whatever, you know, kind of to try to like figure out how to reach more people. When in reality, there is still a system of reaching people, like you said, the live setting, which is harder. But when you do it, it's, I would say, tenfold more successful, long lasting. You get
the loyalty is definitely
exactly
there, you know. Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? There's a staying power to the fans that you make. They'll support whatever you do, and that's disappearing more because people think that the only way is social media algorithms, shit like that.
I honestly will slightly disagree with you on this, just because I feel it's kind of always been that way.
Okay,
I think things have always, because like. I mean, I'm 43 years old, so I don't want to speak for the 50s or whatever, but like, yeah. I feel there's always been, you know, with stuff like music, there's the bands that the record labels or whatever want you to,
they
like
bolster them up, yeah.
You know,
yeah, yeah.
And then there's them, the yeah. ones who power through and like the, right. you know, because like, that's always one of my least favorite arguments when you'll hear people be like, well, my day, music was good and music shit now because they just push this stuff out. It's like, no, because when you're 40 years removed, all you remember is the shit that's long lasting now. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You yeah. forget, you know, like there might be bands, you know, something like Dave Matthews, mm-hmm. who's, they're still doing great with live shit. Like, I think that's a band that, like, whether you like them or not, I don't personally like them that
they
much.
They have their success.
But they're mm-hmm. they're a band that's kind of stood the test of time. Their fans yep, are yep. loyal. They're right. always going to be mm-hmm. there. So they'll be like, people will remember back to like when they came up and be like, oh, this is what real music was like. And I forget at the same time, fucking Snow was pushed for a little bit. Remember Informer? Informer? Like, that was one of the biggest songs in the world.
Yeah, no, all our one-hit wonders.
But you forget that in your brain because now all you think about is, oh, Pearl Jam was from around there. Yeah, Nirvana yeah. was from there. You remember this stuff that's like, you know, great and made
counting
it through.
Counting the hits, not the misses.
But yeah. And then you compare it to the poppy kind of manufactured push stuff now. Like, those aren't the same world.
Yeah.
Like you can't compare Nirvana to fucking, you know, a
Lil
song.
Uzi Vert?
Yeah, yeah, or something like that. You know, like I don't even know popular music now. All I listen to is fucking Wheels on the Bus. That's all I got going right now for me. My two-year-old, but... But like,
shout out Miss Rachel. We already talked about this.
But I feel that's always like there's always some version of that. I think the version now is, you know, there's social media. There's like all that. It's kind of easier to shove that stuff now.
Yeah.
Cause like you can just like push it. To
so
be
let's
like,
look at it this way, right? As a constant battling tide, like all throughout time. So we've had art and we've had entertainment, right? So like even in the 60s and the movement with like Woodstock and all these kind of like really rebellious kind of movements in music and art and stuff that really kind of were trying to avoid that kind of commercialism to it, as we've slowly kind of degraded away from that. My point is more that I'm not saying that it's completely removed the idea of good artists or robbed us of them. It just made it harder for really true, genuine and unique artists to start building those small audiences for themselves in the face of like this behemoth of now. It's literally if back in the day, you know, even record labels, you know, you want to count it that as like an equivalent to nowadays to Spotify and things like that, the way music is distributed to people. You know, let's look at the numbers. It's more like, you know, it's 5,000 to one, and now it's like 5 billion to one, you know what I mean? To make it against any other given artist that this conglomerate megalomaniac industry has decided this is our person this year. Mm. And you're competing with that as opposed to, you know, artists in the past that were competing with literal, like, you know, like, I mean, it was, you know, more money and more, you know, marketing and advertising, but it was not on this scale. It was mm-hmm. not distributed this way. Like I got into a conversation with my family the other day about how, I really do hate curation, dude. I hate it.
Yeah.
I genuinely hate that. Like most of my friends and family are just fine and okay with like Spotify telling them the next song that they're gonna like.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, that's crazy to me, dude. It's like, you don't dig anymore. You don't have, there's no like actually like taste making for yourself. It's like literally like Spotify says like, hey, you like this song and this song and this song. So here's a song that's very similar to that. We think you're gonna like it. And guess what? You like it now. And it's part of your playlist now. And so you're not even making taste for yourself.
Well, I mean, yeah, kind of. But like, I noticed with that, I found
of course you're going to find good things. Of course you're going to find good things.
I found Arcspire through that. Those are like two of my favorite bands.
That's the reason to call it as a positive. You know what I mean? Yeah. Of course, they are going to make hits, but we're removing a quality in us for convenience to like literally like, how much cooler is it when you find a band, when you're touring with a band or you're going to, you know, around and you meet a new band and then you see them play a song, you're like, fuck, I need to follow them. They're good. How much cooler is that? You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's true.
And I know that's not an opportunity that everybody has, but I'd argue it's an opportunity that everybody should try to provide themselves once in a while.
Yeah, go search a little bit and shit.
Yeah, I will say the one thing I've kind of like, that's always a tough thing because like I agree with your point on that, but there's also a human element where just like not everyone gives a shit.
Right. That's exactly where we got stuck on.
It's like
talking to my family.
That's also okay. I think that's the problem. Like when you're an artist, it's hard to remember being because there's certain like aspects of entertainment and like the nerd stuff I like. That I love digging.
Right.
I love digging for weird sports card sets I've never heard of and finding all these cards I didn't know existed. I'm a huge pro wrestling fan. I love finding obscure shit that like, it's not mainstream. It's not going to be on television, but finding that I don't give a fuck about music in that same way.
Right.
Yeah. And I don't think that makes me like a bad consumer.
No.
My focus just happens to be on other nerdy stuff, like other things that I care about. So it's like, it does suck that the algorithms, for instance, kind of make those decisions for a lot of people. Mm-hmm. But like, as the artist, you also have to be a little okay with just the fact that like people consume what they consume, how they consume it.
I won't agree with that part because I would say we are at official crossroads here where now the people can't consume what they want to consume 100% of the time. Literally, it's being gatekeeped.
Because of it's being, a lot of stuff is being pushed to them.
Either stuff is being pushed or the only facets that people have to use or YouTube or Spotify or, you know, that's the only way that they listen to their music most times.
Right.
So that's being manipulated before they get the actual opportunity to, you know, make the decision for themselves. Mm-hmm. We hear it all the time in, people complain about Netflix and this is a big movement now. I'm seeing it way, way more often. People talking about physical media and how they're getting pissed off at streaming services doing exactly what cable was doing 10 years ago and that kind of shit. And it's like, yeah, no, like these are corporations kind of really using monetization as an excuse to rob us of what really makes people creative
of thinking
and making it harder for next generations to be creative because we're pigeonholing the type of media and inspiration that they're going to be receiving. And that's the part that people don't really think about as like an actual like outcome of this is that it's gonna make, and it already kind of has, like you hear people complaining about how movies aren't as good as they used to be. There's a reason that theaters are bringing back all kinds of movies from the 90s so that they could get attendance again because current movies are not putting asses in the seats. And the fact
that's why there's a bunch of reboots and
exactly. The ideas
just remake
are not,
this shit again.
I mean, reboots have existed since things started. Like in the first like 20 years of film, there was like 8 versions of Frankenstein.
Some of the movies that I really like are reboots of movies that I don't like that much.
I never know fully where I sit on this because it's like,
oh no, it's
like I come from two different directions on this because as the artist, I'm 100% on board with like this sucks.
Yeah.
Like people should just be able to just like I'll notice it on, you know, Instagram, like my biggest following of followers is Instagram. I have, you know, 112K or something like that. And then I'll post up a video and it doesn't even show my shit to them.
Yeah. Right.
You know, so it's like, I get frustrated with stuff like that. I'm gatekeeped that way.
Yeah. It's insane, man.
You know, but at the same time, it's just like people like what they like and whether it's popular or not, like if people are enjoying it And also, I say this as one of them, people are dumb. Yeah. People are just dumb. And like, you can't make everybody care. Like, yeah. like you can fight the good fight, which I'm passionate about and I agree with. But man, I do comedy all across this country.
Yeah.
You know, it's like some places want really like deep, artful stuff.
Yeah.
And some people want to see a puppet talk. Like, and you can't like convince them to like go hunt for real, true art.
Right.
You know, and it's, and is it my place to tell them to?
Right.
They seem happy. Dumb people are the happiest motherfuckers on the planet.
They put it, they will be there and listen and laugh. And yeah, everything.
Like, you know, I'll name a name here with the caveat of like, I'm not trying to talk shit, but like, I find someone like Larry the Cable Guy
right.
painfully unfunny
yeah.
for me.
Yeah.
But that dude's either. Selling out theaters and people love him.
Yep. Yep.
So who the fuck am I to tell him he's doing art wrong?
Right.
You know, like that's where I always have these battles in my head.
Yeah, yeah.
It's because like if you want to talk about like the art of it,
mm-hmm.
I don't think he's a great artist.
Right, right.
But
great entertainer.
But who am I to tell him he's doing it wrong when he's selling out fucking these huge things and he's been a huge star for a long time?
Long time, yep.
Like it's who the fuck am I? know, like, it's like your brain has to come at it from two different. If we want to have the art conversation, let's have the art conversation.
Yeah, yeah.
If you want to have the, this is people just like what they like. That's a different conversation. And
so yeah. I'm constantly at an odds with this myself because I'm a huge fan of, you know, like a lot of movies, especially like very schlocky 80s and 90s movies and stuff like that. And I have to live with the idea that, you know, there's these extravagant budgets and all these things that make things that I love happen, even though I'm like, oh, I'm not kind of okay with that. That's crazy. You know what I mean? To make this happen. It's a lot of money, you know, but I still appreciate the thing. But that's where I think like the line in art goes is that rewatchability, that how much it connects to you emotionally and stuff. So we've reached this really like swampy, muddy area with entertainment and art, like intermingling and kind of just like kind of oil painting, mixing together. And we don't really have a solid number or a solid aggregate or measurement for what the value of any of it is. You know what I mean? Like you said, it's subjective.
It all means everything and nothing.
Yeah.
Like, I think that's the problem.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's very hard to pinpoint in that way.
Because some like, I'll use this as like a personal example for why I don't think there's like an answer you can ever fully have to this discussion, as interesting as the discussion is. So the moment in my life that motivated me and told me definitively, you are going to be a performer, Ryan, you're going to do nothing else in life but this, was August 9th, 1999 at the Rosemont Horizon in Rosemont, Illinois, a suburb of Chicago. Watching Chris Jericho debut for the WWF with the big countdown clock.
Oh, hell yeah.
Like that moment right there, I was in the audience for that. So like, it was one of those lucky things where we grew up dirt poor, but once a year we got to go to a wrestling show.
Yeah.
That was the wrestling show I happened to get to go to. He debuted during that. I get goosebumps talking about it still, cause I can like feel like the energy of like when the countdown and he popped up and he's doing this interview with The Rock and it's amazing.
Just an electricity.
Like that moment there, like that art, quote unquote, like that moment was like, this is the power of entertainment. This is like, I want to make someone else feel the way I feel right now.
Right. Right.
For other people, wrestling is the dumbest fucking thing. It's fake and it's stupid and it's men in tights, just fake. Like, so it's like, and we're both right. Like, that's the thing. Like, because everyone has their own personal opinion of what is artistically important and what's not, you can never come to a, because like, you can talk about how it's like, oh, I want like true art to come through. Some people think Justin Bieber's true art and you can't tell them they're wrong because it's a feeling.
You know, you really like made probably one of the greatest points that I've ever heard someone make about it. Because I always do kind of draw the parallels between like stuff like movies and mm-hmm. music, like the artistic angle of it.
Uh-huh.
And then you realize there's something like wrestling that exists that there's no art to it at all.
but there's a ton of art to it if you know it and you know how the world works. It's like, and we're both right. That's what I'm trying to say. You're not wrong for thinking it's bullshit. And no, I'm not wrong for thinking it's amazing. I say that as 100% joke. You know?
Obviously, there's incredible skill that is involved. And like I said, as an entertainer, there's like a, it's almost like, you know, it's, you know, being a performer, it's the only parallel that I could compare, you know, to other, you know, people like wrestlers or, you know, comedians or anything like that. So when it comes down to that part of it, I will say it takes a little bit of extra get up and go to be that person, to have that charisma, that electricity to you. But would I say it's artistic in a way that it challenges that? No, that's just that hits our entertainment button.
You haven't watched good wrestling then.
Well, no, I mean,
you have not watched. Like,
okay. One of my favorite clips is the, guy who they're introducing him and he's supposed to be this like big wrestler, like that's coming up and he's got like a bedazzled.
Yeah. It's the Shockmaster, and he falls through the fucking wall.
Dude. I mean, that to me, That's art.
Yeah,
that moment is art.
and this kind of goes back to the last point because I do get what you're saying, but like that would be like me saying all music is bullshit because Ricky Martin existed.
Here's where I'll meet you in the middle.
That is me.
Most music is bullshit because Ricky Martin exists.
I think that every entertainment thing, it has that 0.1%, whatever, then I'm going to use that generically, but 0.1% that is elite and everything else just exists.
Yeah, no, so like,
and you picking up the Shockmaster, which is a fucking hilarious blunder.
One of the greatest moments I've ever seen in television. Yeah.
It is amazingly bad wrestling television.
It's a perfect moment.
But like, that would be like saying like, oh, well, wrestling can't be art because here's one of the worst examples of it not being art.
It doesn't need to be art. Kind of my point is like, okay, so I covet art as a thing that kind of pushes humanity and helps us kind of as a mass of people, as a populace, kind of perceive new perspective. That's what art does. And I think that's what the defining line is for it really pushes
things. It's your interpretation of what art actually is.
Yes, that's where I would say is like where I kind of get my very stringent definitions and stuff.
Okay.
So entertainment could be a fucking million things, but art can be a million things and also has to be a couple of very particular things to really, because like I said, I would say if that's my one, if you ask me to narrow it down to one defining quality, it's that it has to challenge you. Anybody seen Ferris Bueller?
Yeah.
Ferris Bueller's Day Off? You know, the moment in the museum where they show Cameron just staring at the painting and then you just see him. I think that's a very great depiction of people's interaction and perception and way that they take in art. I always connected with me very well. Is just like, doesn't have to be much. It just has to connect with you, right? Okay, so that's one of the first prerequisites. The next prerequisite is it has to challenge you. You know what I mean? And honestly, I don't feel challenged by like most entertainment.
You're telling me that seeing Jeff Hardy jump off a 20-foot ladder onto two tubs.
It doesn't challenge me. It challenges him for sure. It's a fucking huge challenge for him.
Because that shit was crazy.
I mean,
but the story.
Like, what about magic? Here's another one. That's another form of entertainment. Like, is there an art to magic?
You know what I mean? Because it challenges the brain.
Exactly. So this is where it all gets all fucking muddy.
Yeah, but like, I think it's all to the individual person. I honestly think that's how you define art, is that like your definition of art is within yourself. I think as people, we are being ridiculous to try to dictate to others. Like, and I'm not saying like your concepts are good. I think your concepts are 100% correct.
I'm literally always half baked, half thought out.
But your concepts fall apart in my brain if you tie it to specifics then. Because if you're like, you come up with these specifics, say it's gotta be, you know, challenging, it's gotta be this, and then you say wrestling's not challenging, I would disagree with you.
Okay.
That's where I think that it has to be your own personal opinions on what it is.
Okay, so when it comes down to stuff like that, I just always bring up like relative consensus, right? I would say if you go poll, you know, anybody in New York City, anybody in China, anybody in, you know, Tibet, or I'm trying to, you know, Toronto, there we go, trying to go around the world. Most people will have heard of the Beatles, right? You know what I mean? You know, as an example. So there's this relative consensus of stuff that we all kind of consistently sort of agree on as like artistic or movement. Like, I think my best example that I always try to use is Bohemian Rhapsody. I've yet to meet someone who like literally voices like how much they hate the song Bohemian Rhapsody. And it's kind of this weird thing where it's like, okay, cool. These are the little moments in history where we do kind of have a fine measurement of what, even though in the subjective nature of entertainment and like literally there's so much of it, you could be entertained by this, by that, by this, and that makes your taste, right? But some of us, there's some stuff that for some reason all of us kind of agree on. And that's the part that fascinates me.
I still think it like applies in the same way though. I think there's just some stuff that the numbers are just higher. You know, honestly, because like, I'm sure there's somebody that hates Bohemian Rhapsody.
Right. I've been looking for the person.
But I would still argue that the person who hates it is also right. You know, like,
that's,
you know,
fair.
I think that's how, I think that's why this is also fascinating. And it's why I never give people shit if they're into stuff that I don't care about.
Yeah.
Because like, I think that is such an important part of life, of just like, just loving things, no matter what it is.
My
sister is the biggest Taylor Swift fan in the world. I don't fucking get it, but she's so happy anytime anything happens with her. That I think is beautiful. It doesn't matter if I give a shit or not.
Right.
Like I'm not going to be like, well, she sucks and she does this and it's this kind of thing. And it's the, look how happy she is. She's correct. You know, like, yeah, yeah. I don't have to sit and go to the concert with her. I don't got to buy the CDs myself. Like, that's why I think entertainment and art is so fucking majestic.
Yeah.
Because it's like, it's just so, you can just pick something. And the only people I think are wrong are people who don't get passionate about anything.
Yeah,
I think that's those, I think those
they
people
have
are
no
rough.
Souls.
That's rough, dude.
I don't care what you like.
You know people who,
but like,
we all know people who don't like music.
Don't like
people who don't like movies. Oh, I don't watch TV. It's wild to me.
I can't trust them.
Reptilian. If I ask you what you're into, that you do just for you, it's not for to better your job or whatever, and you can't answer me immediately, you are a piece of shit who weirds me out. like you gotta have at least, it doesn't have to be big.
At least one thing.
If you just like reading books, awesome. I like to watch, you know, reality TV. Sweet. And you're excited about it? Amazing. If you can't tell me a single thing, I don't want you in my life, because that's weird to me. It's weird. Because that's what life is. Like, life isn't about, like, I have a cool job, but fuck my job.
Yeah,
I do my job so I, can
in between there.
So I can buy more sports cards and go to wrestling shows and buy video games and all this.
Are you a big hard media person? Do you like owning stuff? Or
I try to. Space has become an issue. My son was very selfish and took one of my two game rooms.
What a
when
bastard.
Two game rooms.
What is it with these kids these days? So entitled.
So entitled. He won't get a job. I keep putting Arby's applications in his crib.
I'm guessing he's at least two or three already.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Won't do a damn thing.
What are we going to do with this next generation? Yeah.
Living free for 3 days, 3 years is crazy. Yeah. Can't believe
absurd
that.
To me. When I have the choice, I like physical. It's just like, sometimes we're fighting a losing battle to a certain extent. I don't want to say like people should just give up. That's not how I do it. But like, at a certain point, I can't have 5,000 CDs.
Yeah.
And 6,000 video games and 8,000 DVDs. Like, I don't have that kind of space to do that. At a certain point, I have this one little machine right here
that has
infinite music, infinite movies, infinite. At a certain point, you got to be like, all right, I got to pick my battles.
Yep, yep.
I do physical for stuff that I care about a lot.
I do like PlayStation That's Plus am, because yeah. like I'm not a person who will finish a game. I've realized this in myself.
I won't finish I a game. That I want to
try a game, you know? Yeah. I want to see if I like a game.
Yeah.
I recently started playing Hunt Down.
That's a
Hunt
big
Down
battle
is the shit.
For me, actually.
I don't know if you guys have played Hunt Down. That's the shit. I've been really enjoying that. But yeah, I won't finish a lot of games. So it's like, I'll buy games and not finish them. I'm just like, I should just be renting them.
I have a really big battle with that kind of stuff because like, so when it comes to a video game specifically, I'm like, all right, I'm going to try this new video game out. This game is fun. It's a really great game. But I noticed that I'm like, oh, it's fun, but I don't really care to finish it, you know, but then I'm a completionist. So I'm like, then I'm stuck. I'm like, I have to play this
so
game.
You
I,
don't
have
to, even I gotta finish it, but finish you're gonna it. Finish it.
Yeah, exactly.
Out of spite.
Spite gaming.
And like, this is a product of me growing up poor. Like, we were trailer, like, you know, six of us in a single wide trailer. Legitimately, I did not have a bed until I went to college. Like, we were that kind of poor.
Right.
In my brain, like, I could be a video game. And like, logically, a person with a well adjusted brain. Could just be like, well, if you're not enjoying it, just stop playing it.
Yeah.
Just put it down. My brain's like, I spent $6 on this. You don't waste $6. I will play every goddamn minute that this game has to offer.
Yeah, and therein lies the value of physical media right there.
Because of the $6, you know?
Yeah, therein lies the value of physical media. It's not even the enjoyment. It's just the fucking, this is my hard-earned money. Of course I'm going to get what I need.
I could have done anything with this money. I did this. We're going to be homeless because I bought this piece of shit. So we're going to finish it.
So I'm
going to
fucking beat it.
Yeah, every time.
I spent $20 on Roblox, so I played that shit for a month. We played Grow Garden because all my stupid coworkers got me to play it. I spent money on my avatar just to make them look cool. I played that game for a month and that was it because I had to. I was like, no, I'm going to play. I spent money on this and I spent time
obligation
growing my garden. I had to make sure it got to, you know.
Now, I will say that is an argument in favor of physical media for me because I'm sure you were able to easily make those decisions because you just click this button, you click this button, spent this money.
Yep.
With if you make me have to go into like a store and hold the thing and look at
absolutely.
It, then I'm like, okay, do I really want this
really
thing?
Do I really want to do this?
But like digital, you're like, a sale? Boom! Mine!
Pop
hell
it
yeah!
off, dog. That's how I got Hunt Down is literally there was a sale. It's like, oh, it's 50% off. I could get it for this price. Fuck it. I don't even care if I'm going to play it today. Yeah. And I didn't play it that day.
I haven't heard of this until 30 seconds ago. Take my money. I'm in. You're not going to make me hunt for it at all. I don't
Resident
go
Evil
anywhere.
Code Veronica, a game that I have on PS2 and can play that, you know, easily, very on my PS2, but it's more convenient for me to play it on my PS4. Yeah, I'll totally download it right now.
The amount of times I've bought Mario 3 different every time a new Nintendo system comes out does this and does this.
I buy Madden every single year.
What do you guys think
like
about
clockwork?
The argument
and this year I bought it and then I left freaking for 5 days. You know, I was at my girl's house and I went on my little micro tour. I didn't even play it till like a week later, but I just knew I was like, I'm gonna buy it. It's Madden. I'm gonna buy it.
I'm a collector. You'd be shocked at how many damn like I have a ton of sealed games. It's not because I'm a sealed collector. It's because I'm an idiot who buys this shit
and doesn't get.
I have too much. I have way too much to ever consume. Yep. So like, oh, do you buy these sealed? No, it's just I'm a fucking moron who's bad with money. That's who I am.
Yeah. What do you guys think about this whole conspiracy theory that the PlayStation 5 is the most useless system of all time?
That's a real conspiracy theory?
Yeah. A bunch of people
useless?
Are talking about yeah, because they say the argument is basically about 80% of the games that are on PS5 are still accessible on PS4, and they're already starting to develop the PS6 and without having even really reached the potential of the PS5.
Wow.
I think that's just capitalism.
Man. Yeah, like, yeah. No, like, I agree with that 100%.
I mean, does a new iPhone need to be released every year?
Nah.
No.
Are people going to buy it?
100%. Yes. I think that's better. if you do, because like the PS5 is better than the PS4. Just power-wise, and that's all people need.
Yeah,
it doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter.
That's capitalism.
I had a
because like I'll use Madden as an example.
Yeah,
that's a game that needs to come out once every 5 years.
Yeah.
You do roster updates.
That's all they need to do.
That's all they need to do. But they're not going to fucking
be,
do that.
It could be like GTA in the sense that, yeah, it's like a fucking game that you just kind of like, there's updates to it or whatever to kind of update with the timeline.
Every sports game should be like on a 3 to 5 year.
Where
you re-release it. If people want to buy next year, like maybe for $10, you can buy the roster for next year if you still want to monetize it or whatever.
Yeah.
Madden does not need a whole new thing, but people, it's one of the best-selling games every single year.
We revamped the passing system. No, you didn't. Yeah. It's the same shit as last year. Literally, everything's the same as last year.
There's a couple of YouTube channels where this dude, like, every year, he just loses his mind where it's like, here's 90 features that were in Madden 04, and they've added 3 of them back and pretend that it's new shit. Yep. Like, no, you took all this away and now but I buy a Madden every 3 or 4 years. Like I
buy them every year, it. Man. Like, that's my game.
And you know, if people spend the money on, again, who am I to tell them they're doing it wrong? Cause people will buy it.
I just always feel out of place in this conversation because I'm still just an NFL Blitz guy.
You know what?
I love NFL Blitz.
It's such a great arcade game, dude. You want to have a party and just play some NFL Blitz with just some buddies. It's fun.
The best.
The football game I play the most by far still is Tecmo Super Bowl.
It's
not even close.
I play the Tecmo basketball game, dude. Like, I mean, come on.
All the time. It's not even close. So it's
I'm a big emulator guy. I love my Sega Genesis emulators. My SNES emulators.
But I promise you, but hopefully I'll be wrong in this, but like, I'm not going to get mad if he does. When my son is a little bit older to play video games, I bet you if I show him a new Madden and Tecmo Super Bowl, he's going to pick new Madden.
Yeah.
It's just because there's like that, there's the nostalgia and being a part of a time.
Yep.
That's
where you connect with. Yeah. You know?
And that's why I'm never going to push. I want my son to enjoy the music I liked and the movies I liked, but also like you need to understand as a parent, like it's not going to make sense that music from the 90s doesn't make sense to a kid that was born in 2023. And that's okay. Because there's also like, the Beatles doesn't mean that much to me because I wasn't alive when they existed.
So I
don't understand what that movement was and how all the stuff from Woodstock I don't get because I wasn't there. So it doesn't touch me in that way.
Yeah.
It's not going to be the same thing for my son too, you know, like he's not going to like the same stuff.
That's why I'm doing the experiment with the son that I'm raising in my underground bunker that is only, you know, experiencing stuff from the 80s, 90s. He seems well adjusted. He eats his own poop, but right now we're working on that.
In fairness, if that's all you offer him,
I should feed him
more. You should try these circus animal crackers. He can have some of these.
I should feed him more, that to be fair. But no, I mean, no, it's always super interesting. That's always like my favorite thing to talk about really is like how people do intake their art, their entertainment, what kind of like, you know, what that means to them. Because like you said, there's people on the spectrum that are like, they don't give a shit about any TV. They don't give a shit about any music. Like I just picture those people going home to sit in a white room and sit in a chair and just like stare like, what do you do? What do you do? Like, how do you live? You know? But like you said, the subjectivity of all of that is what really does fascinate me, especially nowadays with all the marketing influence and stuff.
Yeah.
I honestly think it's what makes life interesting to a certain extent, not to get too like art, like, ooh, like that. But it's like, I like having friends who are into the same stuff as me too, but I also like hearing why someone gives a shit about the Beatles.
How else do you just, you know,
like, you might not convince me to be a fan of it, but I want to hear like why that excites you. I think that's a cool thing to learn about.
Yeah.
But like, because it is like so much of why we like things is not our choice to begin with. I didn't decide that I was going to be miserable and love the Miami Dolphins. They just called to me in some way, you know, like so much stuff that you choose to like, you didn't really have a say in anyway, whether you
grew up into it.
Yeah. Maybe there's stuff that you would
That's
like if you happen
I've never
to hear
really
it,
thought about,
you know, yeah, cause like, really thought about that. You know, like I'll use this, like, I don't know why green's my favorite color. I didn't sit down and look at all the colors and the pros and cons of what they are.
I know I like blue because it's the least gay.
Yeah.
That's the reason I like blue.
Yeah.
I like green because it's money. You know what I'm saying? And marijuana.
But I also think that's with everything. You know, like why do I like sports? I don't fucking know.
Yeah.
I didn't sit down when I was 5 years old and go, I need to choose a thing.
Yeah.
It just called to me.
It's kinda happened.
I watched Cubs games with my dad and I was like, this is fun. Yeah. I like this. I didn't make a conscious choice to enjoy that. And it's cool for me to like hear why you might have picked like something called to you in some way, even if it didn't to me, and find out why you're excited about it. And why you, like, I think that's interesting. I think it's a fascinating thing about people.
It's the reason I kind of like coming on here and talking to new people is kind of getting those kind of perspectives. Cause literally I these guys don't really know it, but that's my like secret mission on this podcast is to make more provocative conversation about music and art and how it's distributed and get people to question a little bit, like how they make their own tastes and shit like that. That's the most that conversation fascinates me in a way that I won't ever get bored of. You know what I mean? I think that talking to people and how they form their tastes, why they form their tastes, and maybe even providing some influence on how they're going to continue to form their tastes. You know, it's like that stuff is
how their tastes have changed.
Exactly.
You know? Some of the stuff when I was like in high school, you could not have convinced me that 311 wasn't the greatest band that will ever exist. No, they're a band that I like the songs that I can remember time. Like, man, I would have fought you if you would have told me.
I'm a big 311 fan. Yeah. I honestly like them more than I did in high school nowadays because.
But it's just like your tastes change at the same time. No, you know? Yeah. It's like, okay, maybe I shouldn't have been so militant. Maybe I shouldn't have liked
I think
them.
I liked bleach hair more than I think I hated bleach hair more than I hated 311.
Exactly. Yeah, maybe I didn't need to lose friendships over this. All right.
All right, guys, we do got to wrap it up. Let's get our plugs. We'll just go counterclockwise here, starting with our guest. Go for it, man.
Cripplethreat.com and Cripplethreat8 on all my social media. That's where you can see my calendar and all that kind of stuff. Come to a show. I'm still touring. I tour, I'm a little less because I kind of like being a dad right now as well.
Yeah.
And but I need to buy tickets so I can buy more cards from Johnny Store. So he demands that you come to see me.
Half of me expecting you to say something about baby food or diapers. No, cards.
No, my son needs to have a really cool card collection to look at. He's old enough to care. I don't care if he's malnourished. That's not important. That's whatever. He needs Dan Marino autos.
Yes.
Do you have any shows coming up here in SoCal?
Localish. I think everything right now is kind of on the road, but I do work. I usually work the Ice House once a month.
Okay.
And Comedy and Magic Club.
Ice House, what city is?
That's Pasadena.
Pasadena. Okay.
Yeah. Okay.
So I was actually just there Friday. So probably next month. But like I said, cripplethreat.com. I always have my calendar up on there. So
that's a cap show.
Hell yeah. Johnny?
Oh, check me out on everything for like IG, TikTok, YouTube. It's all Johnny Savage, JonnySavage, without the H in Johnny, without the E in Savage. Check out my band, DNG Heavy. We got a lot of new music coming out. We're going to be in San Luis Obispo again next month in October. My birthday weekend, so that's going to be fun. We're going to play a show with our boys in Suicide.
Suicide Silent?
No. I wish. That'd be sick. I forgot their name.
Good job.
I don't know why I forgot their name. But we're going to be out there.
They're called the Ryan Nye Millers.
They're
my closest friends in the world.
Wait, first of all, I didn't say closest friends in the world.
But is that all you?
And then check out The Dunce Official on IG and check out The Stool Podcast. Make sure you guys like and subscribe. Appreciate you guys watching. If you're at this point of the podcast, that means you stayed for the whole thing, which I really appreciate that. That's pretty much it. We didn't hit not one topic.
Yeah, that board is useless.
Yeah, just completely throw it away.
I like episodes like that.
Yeah, me too.
I personally like because that's the electricity of this shit. You know what I mean? Maybe it's not always
just
gold,
conversation.
But I feel like that's the magic we try to provide.
What I like about the pod, especially because like we've been talked about this so many times. Me and
that's so cool. Anyway, so you're gonna find me at Ranthony. go ahead, finish your point.
Me and Mick wrote a song with literally comedy and music references all in one song because that's how we feel. Like, we feel like comedy and music have we're going the same direction, like coming up. It's the same thing, you know, like booking shows, like the way we write and everything. It just, we feel like it's very similar. So we get along. I feel like musicians get along with comedians in such an easy way because it's like we have the same grind. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Me and Mick literally wrote a song just about that. It's called Hustler Ecstasy. Guys, check it out on Spotify. The Dunce Hustler Ecstasy. And
Hustler
that's it.
Ecstasy. Hell yeah.
Hustler. And that's it for me, Anthony. What's up?
So I'll be the first one to plug some more Cherry Coyote stuff. Mick, hit me with the release date for the EP.
October 23rd.
October 23rd. The EP comes out. It is, honestly, the songs, you guys aren't ready. The songs are very cool and fun and unique and melodic and catchy. I'm very excited, you know, to be a part of this project and to be, you know, sharing, you know, what's coming up. So just want to put that out first and foremost. I also did a little fun project for the summer. Just to pass some time, I made some video game music, an EP of video game music. It's called The Computer Cheats, and the EP is called Retrograde. It's available on Spotify and YouTube. Go check that out. We'll probably plug that some more on the podcast or play some music from that sometime in the future. And then I will also be playing some shows coming up soon with Witch and another project I've been working with called Zaida. That's all I got. Mike, take us away.
All right, guys, thanks for checking us out today. Go ahead, before you check out today, make sure you hit the like and subscribe button down below. It's free. Easy way to you know, help us out on this channel. Really appreciate you guys making it this far in the podcast. You can find me on Instagram and TikTok at NoMixGiven.
The video's still on it.
At NoMixGiven. Holy shit. It's cool. Instagram, TikTok, NoMixGiven. Go ahead, hit that like again. Hit that like and subscribe down below. Cherry Coyote, like Anthony was saying, we were working very diligently on getting this release done. It's just a very cool project with the, you know, interesting genres blended in together. And everything Johnny said about the Dunce is all, you know, me, him by proxy. You know, it's the same stuff. So
same shit.
Right. So we'll say peace out, somebody. Let's go.
All right, guys. Appreciate you coming and watching another episode of the Stool Podcast. I think we're very close to episode 50, which is our basically first milestone. So we're happy about that. Thanks for watching. We'll catch you on the next one.
We love you.
Bye, guys.